This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and he joins us live in studio. Now, for folks who've been listening to this program for a while, I still get emails from some people saying, where's Brian? What happened to Brian? Brian was on every Tuesday, and then he wasn't, and now he's only on occasionally. What's going on? So, just to remind folks, after that, you're running for you're an incumbent on the Albemarle County School Board, the only at-large seat. And that is a contested seat. Patrick Wood is running against you. And when the election is over here in, what, 22 days? 23 days? What is it? Are you counting?
I would have to look at my website to figure there's a countdown clock on Charlottesville Tomorrow's election watch page.
There you go. So we're November 6th is the day. And after that, you'll join us, win or lose. You'll rejoin us again every Tuesday.
That sounds great.
To talk growth and development and local politics, and
that's
looking forward
wonderful.
To that.
People have been missing me on the show.
Absolutely,
that's
of course,
nice
Brian. So the website, of course, is cvilletomorrow.org. And as I was saying at the top of the last hour, really the closest thing we have to C-SPAN here in Central Virginia, Charlottesville Tomorrow, at all of these major meetings, these public meetings and public hearings and comments. And y'all are always there. You or Sean Tubbs are there with all sorts of electrical equipment to record the event and post it online. And we certainly benefit from and appreciate all of your efforts. Before we get started in what was on slate for today, Hawes Spencer, the Hook, and I were talking in the last hour about, we were talking about the Kmart, and they're going to tear down the Terrace Theater over there on Hydraulic and build a road through there up in front of the Giant. What's the situation with that?
Well, Hillsdale Drive is going to go through there, the extended version of Hillsdale Drive, which will connect back up to Hydraulic Road. And I guess I'm sure you guys were talking about Whole Foods potentially being the store that's
I had heard a rumor that Whole Foods was going to go where the movie theater is, and Haas said no. They're going to tear down that movie theater
right.
And put a road through there.
That's right, to make room for that road.
And then somebody called and said the Whole Foods is actually going to move from where it is now at, what's it called?
Shopper's World,
over to Albemarle Place, when and if that ever gets built.
Well, they were the first tenant that signed up at Albemarle Place. And of course, I'm probably tapped into the same rumor mill, and I don't have any exact information on what their intentions are. But the word on the street was, because of the delay at Albemarle Place related to getting the sewer infrastructure in place to support that development, that they were looking at other options, and people were pointing over towards the Terrace Theater in that area on Hillsdale Drive Extended as a place they might be looking at. But I don't have any concrete information on
this
that.
New Hillsdale Drive, when's that going to be built? Like, when are they going to tear down the movie theater and make that road?
I would direct the public to look at hillsdaledrive.org. This is one of those road projects that has its own website. You can also look at Charlottesville Tomorrow's website, click on our transportation matrix, and you can see the dates and the cost and who's in charge of those projects. This is a joint city-county project because it goes through both localities, and I believe it's going to go at least on the map that I've seen, it's going through. You know how that shopping center sort of has a north wing, sort of like Barracks Road has that north wing
with the road in between.
This is going to have
in front of the Giant.
I think they show the road actually going through that building, that wing. And maybe it's not actually going there, but that's my recollection of what's on the map.
Huh.
And then it would go in front of the shopping center and then around behind where the movie theater is now, and then connect up to Hydraulic. But that's an example of a project that we're actively monitoring. We're trying to cover those meetings. And they've got a meeting. The next meeting is coming up in November.
And whose meeting is this?
And this is the committee working on the Hillsdale Drive project.
The city-county joint
right.
committee planning this new road.
Yep.
They
and
have
so
a meeting.
We plan to track that meeting down and find out what they're talking about.
Is that an open meeting to the public?
I believe this is the one where we're not sure it's an open meeting yet. It may not be open to the public. We may knock on the door and see if they let us in anyway.
Is that legal? They would have a closed meeting?
Well,
public officials?
I guess I would say it's highly discouraged about a public project like this when you have planning commissioners involved. And again, I need to go back and check my notes, but I think it was the Hillsdale Drive project. We're also, following the Eastern Connector and there are other projects like this where we're trying to go to those committee meetings and, report on them along with the mainstream media here in town. But we hope to come back with podcasts people can listen to and the graphics and all that. We put that all up on the website.
Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. you know, the Eastern Connector is my favorite road that has yet to be built and probably might not ever be built, but that's the road that we really, really need.
Well,
so many people here.
You know,
and remind us again where it would go.
That's the big question. there was so much concern in this community about the Western Bypass for 29, and some of the drawings that they're putting out for this Eastern Connector basically makes it a de facto Eastern Bypass around Charlottesville. So the conversation's going to get very interesting.
So it sounds like it's changing.
Well, there are lots of places it could go. And the up on our website, you can get a lot of information about this, including some of those recent drawings. But they're looking at, a northern route is Prophet Road, and relocating Prophet Road proper outside of the historic little district of Prophet. And because that's a place where it'd be too hard to expand the road over the railroad tracks. So some of these roads, they're talking about moving them out into the rural areas and having two or three bridges over railroads and rivers. These are not going to be inexpensive road projects. All the city and county have signed up for at this point is paying for this location study. So that's the committee that's actively at work now, trying to bring forward recommendations, narrow it down, and get a final proposal in front of decision makers so they can start budgeting and putting it on their wish list.
Right. And generally speaking, the Eastern Connector connects North 29 to the Pantops area.
That's right.
So that you can go from the Pantops area to North 29 without having to go through the city.
That's right.
Generally speaking.
Yeah, and some of the questions, of course, are where do you cross the Ravanna River, another location that's put back on the table recently, and that story is up on our blog, is it potentially may go through Penn Park and through the middle of the golf course to get across to the other side over near Darden Tow Park on the other side and hook up to Route 20.
Whose idea is that?
That's one of the southern...
That's not going to get anywhere. Whose idea is that?
It's funny you should say that, Coy. That's what the consultant said to all the people in the room. The likelihood of this getting approved and getting through the environmental impact studies is
I mean, look what happened to the Meadow Creek Parkway. They proposed to put that through a historic city park, and it's taken 40 years for it to get anywhere.
Yeah, and there's a lot of background on that, but yes. Yeah.
Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Now, besides growth and development, y'all also track local elections, and you have been to all of these candidate forums. Let's talk about the city council in Charlottesville. Now, most people assume that it's a done deal. Charlottesville, one of the bluest, most democratic places in Virginia. If you're a Democrat running for city council, chances are you'll win. But we have two independents running in this city council race who, in my view, at least from where I sit, they look like they're getting some traction.
I think Barbara Haskins and Peter Kleeman, the two independents, have made this very interesting, and they're bringing other ideas to the table and asking questions of their other candidates, and it's made for some very interesting candidate forums. We've got some sound bites, I know we're going to play in a minute, from the Greenbrier Neighborhood Candidate Forum, and one of the things I've observed, Coy, is as these candidates go through these forums, they're getting better and better, all of them. Every one of these five candidates. There are three seats up on city council. There are five candidates running, and Mayor David Brown is the only incumbent running. So there are two open seats being vacated by Kendra Hamilton and Kevin Lynch. And I think it's going to be a great contest. One of the things Charlottesville Tomorrow does every election is prepare a voter guide. So we invited all of these candidates in both the city and the county, to interview them about land use and transportation issues. We've got 17, 18 questions. We're releasing some of them on our blog, and we're releasing 7 or 8 of them in a printed format in a voter guide that's going to be mailed to every household in the city and, in the case of the county, and
when does that come out?
That'll come out the last week of October, so the week before the election.
Okay.
And I would encourage the public to look for that.
Now, what clips are we going to hear?
What I tried to do was challenge myself to pick a 2-minute soundbite, and in some cases I've compiled different statements into 1 2-minute segment. But I took 2 minutes from each candidate from the Greenbrier Neighborhood Candidate Forum,
which was the most recent one.
The most recent one, and I think these are good representative 2-minute samples of what that candidate stands for.
All right, let's listen. Here is David Brown, the only incumbent in the city council race at the Greenbrier Forum. David Brown.
I'm David Brown. I was elected to city council in 2004. And I was thinking, coming over here, there's a bunch of things we've done since I've been on city council I'm really pleased to have been part of doing. We enacted a stream protection ordinance. We enacted a steep slope protection ordinance. We signed the mayor's agreement on climate change. We enacted a summer jobs program for kids. We've made improvement with buses. Some of the buses run on Sundays. We have a bus that now goes to the county office building in Southwood. I think we've dramatically improved the access people have to information, especially online information. We've enacted a number of different affordable housing initiatives. We're implementing an intelligent transportation system, in other words, synchronized traffic lights, and you especially see that on Main Street with the improvements there. We've put more money into bicycling and pedestrian improvements. We've curbside recycling has expanded. You guys have all probably noticed that. We've enacted historic districts. We're starting the process of making Jefferson School a real hub of the community. And there are a couple things I'd like to be part of in the next 4 years that I'd really like to see continue. The first thing is the sustainability initiatives, which commits the city to trying to decrease the energy that we use in conjunction with all the cities around the country, counteracting global warming. It's not just a city initiative. It's something that we all have to participate in. We all have to start thinking about things like using compact fluorescents, about using Energy Star appliances, about unplugging our cell phone chargers from the wall when we're not using them because they consume energy even when there's no cell phone plugged into them, putting our appliances on power strips, you know, increasing efficiency. Cool news is all these things save us individually money, and we have to figure out how to make those initiatives available not just to the middle class and the upper class, but to the lower class, that everyone shares in participating in that. And there's some other things I want to do, and I'm going to weave them into answers down the road here.
The comments of David Brown, the only incumbent in the Charlottesville City Council race. 3 seats open and 5 candidates, 3 Democrats and 2 independents, right?
And David Brown, you know, running on his record, he quickly went through his accomplishments.
That was a long list
of stuff. As he sees them, and then outlined priorities for the future, heavily focused on the environment and sustainability issues.
Next up is Holly Edwards, and of course, these clips are from the most recent city council forum at Greenbrier. Here is candidate Holly Edwards.
Ms. Edwards, what differences have you seen with your other candidates, including your running mates?
I think I'll start with the similarities, because we thought it was important to have a campaign theme, building a better community, that we all agreed upon. And I guess in terms of an image, we all hear the same music, and I think if you put on some music now, the way I dance and the way Mr. Hoochie danced and the way David Brown danced would have a totally different step, but the music would be the same. And we can hear the same music, but the dance does not have to be the same. And I think that the difference that I bring and the strength that I offer and what I have enjoyed about campaigning with my teammates is that I bring the perspective of the experience I have with working with people. I'm allowed to ask the questions of how will this affect someone on a day-to-day basis? Whereas, you know, for example, Mr. Hoochie talks about transportation and expanding it. And I can say, well, I know that the people that I work with just really want to have a bus that's going to take them straight from the house, straight to work, you know. And then he can look at the bigger picture of, well, maybe we need to really look at what the routes are and really fine-tuning those. So I think that with the three of us, what we bring is different perspectives with the same goal of building the better community.
City Council candidate Holly Edwards, Brian?
Yeah, you know, she's emphasizing that she's part of the Democratic team. She's one of the 3 Democrats nominated for City Council. And she's emphasizing that she wants to bring a different perspective to the council's deliberations and with a focus on health and wellness in the community.
I didn't hear a lot of specifics, but I did hear that theme.
Yep, and, you know, I'm sure in other questions she touches on some of those things, but...
Next up is the fellow Democratic candidate for Charlottesville City Council, Satyendra Hooja.
I've been in Charlottesville for the last 34 years. And for 31 of those years, I was director of planning and strategic planning. I bring a fair amount of experience, creativity, and a proven record of service to this community. And I feel that I can I'm a public servant, and I like public service. So I think I can provide some help. And I think the definition of leadership in my mind is that ability to perceive and opportunities and problems before they become so, and then motivate other people to work on them, work with them. Because no single council person can do all the things that you promise sometimes. We need to work with other people. And I have shown over the years that I have gotten a lot of things done in this town, like pedestrian mall, green belt, Tenzin Page housing. So there are a lot of things. I think what I bring to the picture is that I do bring the experience, I do bring the creativity to get things, find solutions, and getting things done. And it is easy to talk about a lot of ideas, but you have to be able to see how you can get them done. And I think I have shown that I can get them done. But I think we have a difference. Just because we're Democrats, it doesn't mean that we all agree. As a matter of fact, you can see that two of us support Meadow Creek Parkway, and Holly is not so excited about it. So Democrats, I don't think, have ever all agreed always. And we are independent individuals. And I think we'll be that way. But we want to think of what's best for the community, not just for Democrats or Republicans. That's not how I think of it.
Charlottesville City Council candidate Satyendra Hooja at the recent Greenbrier Forum.
Yep. Hooja's emphasizing his long track record with the city and the fact that he's got some experience getting things done within city government.
Which is a fact. I mean, it's not his opinion. I mean, he has been working here for a long, long time in City Hall. Very interesting to see a former staff person come out and get into politics and run to be on city council. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
That's a big transition for someone to make, but he seems to be becoming quite a good candidate.
Next up is independent Charlottesville city councilor candidate Peter Kleeman.
I've decided to become a candidate for city council after about 10 years of being a citizen, an involved citizen on many of the issues, and I've seen many of you at various meetings I have been at. And my major areas of concern about the city's future relate to growth, environmental sustainability, transportation issues. But being a citizen, an involved citizen, and working through neighborhoods, I recognize how important it is to open the door to individuals and neighborhood representatives to work closely with the city leadership and the staff, and that they become part of the decision-making process in the city. My personal experience over the past 10 years is that that's not an easy task. If you're an individual and you want to get involved in a particular project, it's very difficult to get the information you need in a timely fashion, to understand who the people are that you can work with, and how to bring your ideas into the mix of ideas that are being considered. Typically, this doesn't happen until the very end of the process, and at that point, it may actually be too late to see changes of any substantive type, just because... One of the major things that I've been stressing in my campaign is that I am interested in Charlottesville accepting its role as being the center and leader for our region. And I believe leadership is the key issue. And I think what I'm bringing to the table is a level of leadership that is not just about the vision for the future, but it's also about the day-to-day activities today. And many of you may or may not know, I guess, that. So my feeling is I have people supporting me who have been candidates from the Republican Party. I have people who are current sitting councilors who are supporting me, who are Democrats. And I have a broad range of people in between, because I think I speak to the population in general and not to a particular view of the political spectrum.
Independent candidate for Charlottesville City Councilor Peter Kleeman, and the last of the five candidates for Charlottesville City Council, Barbara Haskins, her comments at the most recent council forum.
I decided, or I felt compelled to run last spring as I kept reading in the paper about the city budget cycle, and it just became increasingly horrifying. I try to say something new for them. They've heard it all before. But it is horrifying to me, the way the last budget cycle was unfolding in terms of... what I would consider profligate spending. And that came on the heels of years of double-digit increases in home assessments and the city manager and city council sort of deciding, let's take it all. There have been lowerings of the tax rate, but no real decrease in taxes at all. And I became worried that there wasn't anybody on city council that was thinking about this side of things. A lot of people can think of projects and visions and goals, and they're all wonderful things. But, you know, my concern is, and sometimes I feel that there's so many wonderful ideas, there's so many things none of us could possibly be against. There's just got to be a little bit more financial grounding in this. We have 10 square miles, one quarter of the residents in poverty, limited ability to have a commercial base, so the homeowners are pretty much paying the bill. Our tax rate is higher than Fairfax County. We're 95, they're 89, and the county's 68. The more we have wonderful projects, the more someone's going to have to pay for them. And I am just sort of a financial brakes kind of person, unless it seems fair to everyone who's paying. But the bigger problem is, how should Charlottesville be structured to survive? I hope that voters ask themselves, can we continue our current status of 10 square miles with a lot of high service needs? The three options are reversion, merger with the county, or revisit the revenue sharing agreement. So I'm the fiscal candidate.
The fiscal candidate, independent candidate, Barbara Haskins for Charlottesville City Council. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather and continue this discussion on the other side. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Poi Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Let's rejoin the conversation with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org. Just to sort of sum up now, there's five candidates, three Democrats, two independents.
Yep.
We had a caller during the break say, oh, those poor independents. How could they ever win in a city where the Democrats are so strong? There's three open seats. There's three Democratic candidates. Well, you're exactly right, ma'am.
Yep,
it's an uphill climb.
Uphill battle for any independent in the city of Charlottesville. But, you know, they have brought to the table different points of view, different issues are getting discussed. And I think that's important for the public to consider. We, in those sound bites, we only pick 2 minutes out of a long debate. The public who are interested, I would encourage them to go to cvilletomorrow.org, go to our Election Watch website, and there you can get audio transcripts, even watch the video of all these candidate forums. And again, be on the lookout for that voter guide coming to your mailbox.
Gavel to gavel coverage, as they say, of all of these meetings. Brian, let's turn to a recent meeting at the Albemarle County office building that was well attended, to say the least. It was packed. And what was going on? What was the purpose of the meeting and what happened? We got lots of audio we're going to share in just a minute. But as a preview, tell us what was happening.
The Board of Supervisors was reviewing some recommended changes to the ordinances that relate to stream buffers, critical slopes, building on steep terrain, and family subdivision rights. Those were brought forward at their request. The Board of Supervisors unanimously asked for these things to be worked on by staff and by the Planning Commission to support their comprehensive plan. The comp plan has a chapter devoted to protecting the rural countryside. And these are a few of the strategies that over the past couple of years still remain as possibilities because they haven't been voted down completely. And so the question in front of them was, should we make these proposed changes?
And there are changes not building too close to a river or stream for obvious reasons, which if you don't understand that by now, it's bad for the water to build too close to the river or the stream. You have more runoff, more junk gets into the water. It clogs everything up.
On the stream,
you kill
buffers,
the rivers.
On the stream buffers, the ordinance being looked at is already in place for half of Albemarle County. So the half of Albemarle that has intermittent streams that ultimately feed into our water supply, those are already protected by these 100-foot buffers on each side of the stream. And the proposal in front of them was, hey, let's apply that to the rest of the rural countryside, because they saw the benefits, you know, when it comes to our water supply, it has other benefits for stream health and sedimentation, you know, downstream from Albemarle County as well.
And the other one is building on slopes. They're trying to avoid, you know, what happened in California.
That's right.
They're trying to avoid everybody building homes on the sides of these hills and mountains.
Well, and that, what you just described, we already have restrictions on that. We already have critical slope ordinances dating back to 1989 that limit disturbance on critical slopes. You have to come to the Planning Commission today and ask for a waiver to do that. And what the proposed change would have done would be to eliminate a loophole that would have allowed driveways crossing critical slopes. That was the Board of Supervisors was shown examples where houses had been put, you know, on the tops of ridges or on the sides of mountains because a driveway was put across a critical slope to allow that development
to occur.
Somebody
found a flat spot somewhere and built a house, and then they put the driveway on the hill instead.
That's right. So this proposal would have eliminated that loophole for new roads, not existing roads or existing lots that have been created. And there are lots of safeguards. And instead of going to the Planning Commission, you could go to county staff to get those exceptions.
And the last one was about subdivision
family
rights.
Subdivision rights. How long, if you subdivide part of your property, give it to a child, how long do they have to hold it in the family before it can be resold? And the proposal to right now, today, you have to hold it for 2 years. And the proposal was anything from 5 to 15 years, which was being discussed. 15 years is the max allowed by state law.
And that is trying to prevent kids from, or anybody in a who owns farmland from flipping it, from getting farmland in an inheritance or as a gift, and then flipping it and selling it to a developer.
Correct.
Trying to slow down the pace of development in the rural areas.
Yep, and there was some smart public comment on that subject during the public hearing. There were about 80 people at this public hearing that spoke. There were hundreds in the audience, but about 80 people spoke, and one of them put up a PowerPoint and said, you know, here are the stats, and question really whether the county has a problem on that front, questioning how many family subdivisions occur each year, and it seems to be a small number. So they were questioning, why do we need to change anything?
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting. So the where should we start? We've got a lot of audio here. The first is an ad that the Farm Bureau took out and played on local television.
Yeah, let's run with that.
All right. Here's, and this, just to set it up for us.
Well, this is the Albemarle County Farm Bureau apparently ran an ad on Channel 29, television ad, for the 4 days leading up to the Board of Supervisors meeting. They were encouraging the public to come and take part, but they had a pretty strong message in the body of their advertisement.
Let's hear it.
Two ordinances proposed by Albemarle County staff as resource protection will not protect farmers. If passed, they will restrict your family's building sites, limit the value of your property, give Albemarle County control of your property for 15 years. The right labels make some things sound better than they are. Attend the public hearing Wednesday, October 10th at 6 p.m. at the McIntyre Road County Office Building and express your opinion. A message from the Albemarle County Farm Bureau.
Man, talk about putting the fear into you.
Well, and
is it accurate?
Well, I would say not entirely. I would say there's some elements of truth in here, but let's take the first line. Two ordinances proposed by Albemarle County staff. I mean, in fact, these ordinances were requested by the Board of Supervisors, and they'd previously been approved by the Planning Commission. They came forward on a unanimous vote from the Planning Commission. And so I think, you know, it makes it sound like it's a bureaucratic power grab, you know, by county staff just coming up with this stuff on their own. In fact, there's a big community process dating back to the comprehensive plan and the approval of that unanimously by the Board of Supervisors in 2005. You know, we could talk at length about this. The transcript of this is up on Charlottesville Tomorrow's blog, and I encourage the public to look up there. But, you know, when it comes to restricting building sites, yes, maybe in some places that would happen. But again, there are lots of waivers and safeguards that were being talked about.
They're basically trying to restrict you from building right next to a stream.
Well, right. But if you look at the ordinance, when it comes to farmers, you know, this is the Farm Bureau running this ad, there were lots of protections for agriculture. And in fact, at one point in the meeting, Mark Graham with the county pointed out that, you know, the cows can still be grazing in the creeks. There's nothing we can do about that. And there's even smaller buffers around pasture land and things like that. Limiting the value, you know, of property. I mean, the public actually believes, and we've surveyed them on this, that if you limit development out in the rural area, property values will go up.
Hello? I think, isn't that obvious? I've never understood that, why they think you're limiting the value when you're doing just the opposite by ensuring that it stays rural.
And the last point, again, sets it in a negative frame when they say, give Albemarle County control of your property for 15 years. 15 years was the extreme. It was the number asked for by the Board of Supervisors. The Planning Commission actually came forward with a compromise that gave people who had been living on the land for a long time a 10-year credit. So 5 years might have been the max. But there was no discussion by the Board of Supervisors once they actually got to discussing this to really come up with a compromise or some alternative. It's 2 years today. 15 was at the extreme end. So again, it's pointing out the extreme end, but it's framing it in government is going to have control of your property. I mean, I have 3 acres in Ivy, and I can't subdivide it. So I don't think I'll ever be able to subdivide it. So I guess government has control of my property, too. But
it
just sort of depends how you look at it.
Sounds really misleading as far as I'm concerned. But, hey, we got a clip from Dennis Rooker, Albemarle County Board of Supervisor, at this meeting. Let's listen to that.
This board has adopted a comprehensive plan, which says that we should try to have development take place in the 5% of the county that's the growth areas and try to protect and preserve the natural resources in the rural areas. And much of what this board has done, I mean, all of y'all have voted for development after development in the rural and the growth areas based upon that concept. And you've heard people talking tonight that about growth. The growth continues. There are several of us on this board have continually opposed spending taxpayer dollars to attract growth to the area. Others have supported spending taxpayer dollars to bring growth to the area, but growth continues to come. And the question is, where is it going to take place and in what form will it take place and how much will it impair resources? Fairfax County was the biggest dairy farm area in the state in the 1950s. Today, I don't think there's a dairy farm in Fairfax County. It happens. The question is, do we want to take a picture of the county 50 years from now and find development in a reasonable defined urban area, or do we want it spread out throughout the county in multiple cul-de-sac subdivisions? And a lot of what's been talked about tonight in one form or another is we need to preserve things that facilitate development in the rural areas.
And I didn't hear one person tonight say that they were in favor of large-scale development. They talked about one or two or three houses for their children. That's all they talked about.
There's very little in this ordinance that would prevent one or two or three houses on the land being talked about.
We've convinced the people that.
Well, that's just simply not the case.
Please,
Brian, it sounds to me like there were a lot of people there that night who were misinformed. I mean, really, almost intentionally.
Well, you heard there at the end Dennis Rooker expressing some frustration that there was some misunderstanding there. I think these are complicated issues. Sometimes the announcement that goes out from the county is pretty laden with details
and way too much.
And you know, it's not hard to understand how people could take it the wrong way sometimes. But at the board level, you know, there was 4 hours of public feedback. They have 1 hour. They debated this, but there wasn't that sort of, hey, let's clarify. Let's help explain. You heard that from Mr. Rooker right there. But that wasn't a two-way conversation.
The folks who were against it, Boyd, Wyatt, and Dorier, didn't seem like they made a big effort, like you say, to explain this to people who were misinformed. They sort of took advantage of all those folks who were there who were misinformed and thinking it was this when it wasn't.
And they have other concerns. They have concerns about property rights, and I think in the next clip you'll hear some of Mr. Boyd's comments followed up by David Slutsky as well.
I'll tell you where I am on it. It's 25 minutes till 12.
It's Kim Boyd.
Been here since 2:30. There's a bunch of things that were brought up by this. I think you can't say the watershed thing was supported by everybody because, first of all, we didn't send notices to the people that are going to be impacted by the 200-foot buffer, 100 foot on each side of it. I have heard from a number of people who said that would that their land was narrow and it would basically take a lot of it away. I think that in concept, it's certainly something that we want to support, but I wouldn't say that it's been vented. I mean, somebody mentioned that what we got is a problem with communication. I'm not sure that we've really communicated well what these ordinances are and who they're going to impact. And we only sent the notices to the people that were on the critical slope list, not on the people that would be on the list. So say that we haven't heard anything about that. I heard that it would impact farming. And I'm not sure I know the answer to that question. One of our farmers says that it would restrict what farmers might want to do, the use of that property.
Only 25 feet.
Yeah.
They have a 25-foot setback.
Row crops. Just for row crops, you can still have pasture, hay pasture. You can still have cattle, right? You can have cattle in the stream yet. I mean, It's not a good idea.
If somebody thinks that way, somebody who follows these, and I know as Mr. Shackelford mentioned that, there is some confusion out there about it. What I'm trying to say is that why do you all feel that we should make a vote on any of these things at 11:30 at night after without even trying to give some kind of thought and consideration to what has been said here tonight?
You didn't advocate for delaying the vote on Biscuit Run at 1 in the morning. I mean, I don't understand why 11:30 at night is somehow a magic number.
Biscuit Run doesn't have anything to do with this.
It's an example of us holding a public hearing, and then after the public hearing, after we've heard the public weigh in on an issue that we've been dealing with for years, we go ahead and make a decision. We've done it numerous times. In fact, in my years on the board, we haven't delayed any votes.
The points. Let me go back to a couple of points. Let's look at the...
That's Ken Boyd and David Slutsky. That's a good point, David Slutsky, that made to Ken Boyd. You know, hey, we went to 1 in the morning on a vote with Biscuit Run, had a public hearing at 11 o'clock at night, and, you know, here it is another late night and you want to go home. What's the difference?
The point Ken Boyd, the chair of the Board of Supervisors from the Ravana District, the point he was trying to make was the public did seem confused. People that are often in front of this board, he mentioned Corky Shackelford with the Farm Bureau, were raising questions that got his attention. And, you know, you and I talked on the eve of this meeting, and I pointed out that the people that show up, you know, it's really important. And I think that's an important issue here, that the people that do come to this public hearing carry a lot of weight. There were about 80 people who came. 61 of them, by my count, were against any of these three things, and 21 were in favor of them. However, you know, I thought it was interesting. Dennis Rooker counted all his emails and letters that he had received, and it was much the opposite. He'd gotten 77% of his emails were in favor of this and 23% were against. So there are different ways to communicate. The board is always receiving messages in different ways from people. But the people who actually come and show up, it carries a lot of weight.
But they didn't do anything.
They ended up not doing anything. There was a small vote about one of the related issues on the stream buffers that did not go forward. And, you know, that stalemate of 3-3 is, I think, reflective of the fact that this community at the board level is very divided when it comes to issues of how we best protect the rural countryside and how we balance individual property rights with what's in the best interest of the community as a whole. Those are questions we explore in our voter guide, and the audio, the whole hour of their debate is available up on our website as well, and I'd encourage the public to take a look at that.
Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. You can learn more online at sevilletomorrow.org. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
For over 50 years, UVA Community Credit Union has been helping members of
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.